Blog Talk Radio.
We have returned. Pop Culture Stars is back tonight with some exciting things. We got great guests, great panelists, great everybody. This is Dr. John, and I am broadcasting live from Lakemont, Georgia, the Paranormal Center of the East Coast, just outside of Clayton, Georgia, with the beautiful mountains, with the trees, with absolutely several UFOs and Bigfoot out there hanging out and talking to me. So just glad to be here, and I knew that would excite Dave that way. And I want to, of course, greet our panelists, co-hosts, and friends. Papa Stro, how are you doing tonight?
Finally made it back. You sound so eloquently in describing your environment. You sound like a Bob Ross making a painting. I was pretty impressed.
Well, thank you. I actually have some Bob Ross buttons now that I wear, so that's good.
Add some more birds and trees.
They're no mistakes, just happy accidents. We love Bob Ross. Bob Ross is a mentor to all and a great
Oh, that was
spirit.
So shrewd, John. Real shrewd. You're so impressive tonight.
Oh, my God.
Keep going. You're on a roll.
Oh my God! No, I think I'll just wait. I'm gonna let
move over, Tom Hanks. Move over, Tom Hanks. Mr. Rogers is in the house.
Now. But anyway,
Call Captain Kangaroo either way.
Yeah, Star Stage and the ring, and we're so proud to have you. So glad you're here, and from Indianapolis.
I am too. Thanks.
Yep, absolutely. From Indianapolis, Indiana, Todd, how are you tonight?
I am outstanding to supernatural and ecstatic to be here, gentlemen. Glad to see we have most of the team here. I know we have one of our cohorts out in Panama doing her thing. Excited about things going on. We're up here middle of August, and weather's beautiful. Didn't look neat, and I don't know, man. Things are going great. We're tearing things up at work. We're doing good.
Paradigm shift, as they say, right, Todd? Supernatural.
Yep.
That's it.
Absolutely. And I do want to announce that because you're in Indianapolis, the first weekend in September, our friends, the Shoe Squatchers, are going to be in Indianapolis at Hellhound, the Horror Film Festival and Horror Comic Con. And I am talking with them to see if they will be our guests the Wednesday night before Hellhound, right here on Pop Culture Stars. Papa, can you imagine anybody better than Jen, Jenna, and Tammy? I think they'll be great, don't you?
Oh, right before Hellhounds, oh my goodness. I'm sure it'll be quite a mood before that event.
Yeah. And we're sending Todd as our emissary to the event so that he can give them all from us.
A road correspondent, right?
There we go.
We're probably going to have him host a 15-minute segment there with them, but we're working to get them on Wednesday night before that event, and I think it'll just be a blast. So, Todd, glad you're in Indianapolis. It's a long way, and glad we have somebody up there. So you're outstanding, supernatural. Dave Atwell, author at large, how are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing good, real good. I'm thinking to do this show outside. I haven't done the show outside on the deck for the last three or four shows due to the insect issue, where the bugs are big enough to carry off activity buses. But I've got these two magic candles my wife got me that put off the smelly stuff and it's supposed to chase the bugs away. We shall see. But otherwise, doing well.
We're glad you are, and you spoke with me earlier that you have a special set of commentary and tribute to a Comic-Con friend of ours. It's your turn, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. And then not to start to go off on a down note, because it certainly isn't, but our good friend Dango, and for most Americans, they pronounce his name Nagayan, but that's not how you pronounce it. You pronounce it Wen, almost with the W, with the Stewie W-H, like quip. And so it goes Dango Wen when you actually say his name properly. But he's a fantastic, fantastic gentleman. Walking Dead alumni, bodybuilder, stand-up comedian, firefighter, you name it, this guy does it. And pardon me while I'm speaking, because, you know, it still kind of gets to me. It's still setting in, but he was the guy. And you know, Stroh and Todd, we all met him and got to know him and everything. And the first time I met him, he, at the end of the show, and you know, my first show, I was a little gun shy on talking to anybody. I just kind of stayed in my space, you know, and because I was cutting my teeth. And towards the end of the show, He stops and says, he says, man, I've been listening to you talk about this book all day, man. He says, I got to read this thing. And I'm standing there going, wait a minute. This the guy from The Walking Dead wants to read my book, you know. And it was that moment we hit it off. And I hit a low spot, you know, there for a little bit, as anything goes when you're doing your particular work. You have your highs and your lows. But this guy would call me up and say, hey, man, how's the writing going? And he didn't have to do that. And he didn't have to be my friend, and he didn't have to be that guy who put his boot in my ass whenever I needed the motivation. So one heck of a classy guy. And to kind of punctuate, you know, the cancer got to him, and he got treated for it and everything, and still wasn't quite out of the woods. And, you know, you hear people saying, oh, well, you know, he lost his fight to cancer. I'm going to tell you something, Dango kept right on going, and he was out and about and enjoying his day Friday. Posted on Facebook, communicating with all of us, and I went to bed Friday night and rode the spirit horse home. And, you know, so you could say he lost. I say he won because he enjoyed life right up to the last damn minute and didn't suffer. So he pretty much gave cancer the finger, and he's locking down all of us now and hopefully saving us the seat when our turn comes. But sorely missed, and for all the dirtbags out there that need to go, he damn sure wasn't one of them, and he had every reason in the world to stay. So my heart goes out to his children. They're all grown now, but go out to his kids and his wife Michelle, who is a fantastic young lady, and I hope they're all just pulling together and staying strong as Dango would wish they did. And again, miss you, brother. It's a tough pill to swallow, and sometimes I don't know, I don't get life sometimes when it comes down to it. But this guy was in such better shape than 95% of the people I know. And I guess his calling, I guess the heavens seemed more than we did. So, yeah, appreciate you letting me get that off my chest. And like I said, we We lost a good one. That's damn certain. But thanks much for giving me that moment, man. I appreciate it.
You are welcome. And thank you very much. And we wish Django all the best, because the more good things we think about him, the better off things will be. So thanks, Dave. And I guess before we introduce our guest tonight, I want to tell everybody that next week, as we are moving into the Cherokee Comic Con, we have two really wonderful guests. First of all, we have Spencer Fisher, former number two MMA in the world. He lives in Silva, North Carolina. He's only like 20 minutes from Cherokee. He has an MMA studio, and we've got one of his instructors, who's quite a champion himself, Danny Thomas. So we got some really fine people coming on next week. And Papa Stroh, I know that you and Spencer will have some things to talk about, because you are absolutely an MMA expert. We're so proud to have you here. So it'll be a lot of fun. I'll be getting out publicity next week. So right now, I wanted to introduce our guest tonight, Stephen Bastian. Stephen, filmmaker. He's from Eastern North Carolina. And Stephen is actually working on a Star Wars fan film. Stephen, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing great. We're glad to have you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, I'm going to start this off because we've got a talented group of co-hosts. Well, these are some of the best friends anyone can have, and they're smart. It's great. Tell us a little bit about making a fan film, and what are you doing it about? I know it's Star Wars, but there's a lot involved with Star Wars.
Well, yeah, and this is kind of an interesting story. I guess I could take you back to how it all started, if you want me to start there.
Sure.
My daughter, at the time, was 7 years old. This goes back 3 years. And she wanted to do, you know, she's an actress, and she wanted to do a Star Wars film. We were watching, Star Wars on TV, on DVR, and, she wanted to do one. And I was like, well, that's something I've always wanted to do. I mean, it's a challenge. It's a lot of special effects, as you know, so definitely challenging to pull that off, especially in Eastern North Carolina, because everything here is red brick, and that is not from a galaxy far, far away. So finding locations to shoot that would give you that Star Wars feel has been really challenging. But anyway, this started off as a 10-minute fan film. I mean, we were going to do a little 10-minute short film about a character named Mara Jade. Some people are familiar with her. Some people aren't. For those of you that are not familiar with her, she was the Emperor's Hand in a series of novels that came out in the 90s. And she became wildly popular. She was the Emperor's chief assassin. And she eventually married Luke Skywalker and became Mara Jade Skywalker. I decided, because I'm looking at my seven-year-old going, well, what kind of Star Wars film can I do for a seven-year-old? I mean, I'm trying to think. It's going to have to be an origin story. And that's when I picked Mara because of her. I was like, she could do Mara. They've never done an origin story on her. Matter of fact, in the novel that she was introduced, I believe it's the only reference to her childhood is says that she was taken from her parents as a child by the Emperor. So that gave me carte blanche. I could do anything I wanted because there was no backstory to this girl. So being the writer, I wrote this story. And like I said, it was a 10-minute film. We brought in a girl named Vicky to play Mara's mother. I was going to play Mara's father. And, my daughter would play Mara Jade. It was just going to be three people, very small film. Well, I brought in Vicky, who also has done some casting in the past. She brought in another guy, another guy, and another guy. Now we've got over 100 crew and cast members. We've got some very talented people that have been editing for, decades, know what they're doing, lighting people, sound people, camera people. I've got the first female director that I believe, I may be mistaken, but as far as I can tell, she's the first female director to ever do a fan film and you're doing not only a feature film, this, oh, by the way, it started off as a 10-minute film. We brought in a few more people, became a 20-minute film, then a 30-minute film, then an hour-long film. Then we ended up with a two-hour film, and that became so big that we had to split that into a trilogy. So we're actually doing three feature-length fanta, and we're calling it the Jade Trilogy. The first film is called Will of the Force. Second film is going to be called The Calling, and the third is going to be called The Fall of Mara Jade. And it spans 20 years in the Star Wars universe, and it shows her being from birth to when she eventually becomes the Emperor's Hand. We got other people involved, so many people involved, that we ended up looking into a charity because of a character that we're bringing into this film named R2KT. R2KT is a pink astromech droid, like R2D2. Her father, the droid was named after Katie Johnson. Katie Johnson passed away, I believe, in 2005 of brain cancer. Her father had this droid built so that it could sit by her bed, and they named her R2KT after Katie. Katie passed away of brain cancer, and her legacy is living on through the droid. The droid goes to various hospitals all over the world to entertain children and to, you know, promote cancer research awareness and the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Well, we adopted that because we're bringing KT into this film. The film is actually going to be dedicated in memory of Katie Johnson, and we're going to bring awareness to childhood cancer research and the Make-A-Wish Foundation by PSAs at the end of the film, and as well as The Calling in the second film. I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but there is a young character who passes away of brain cancer, and it's a touching tribute to Katie, and it really will drive home some emotion and hopefully get people to donate, like I said, to St. Jude and to Make-A-Wish Foundation.
That's awesome.
Went a long way to get there, but I got there.
That is awesome.
It really is.
But, yeah, so it's a lot of people. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, so I was going to say, so where are you right now in the production cycle? Where are you headed? Where are you going? Where are you headed? What you got going on right now? Because a lot of our listeners want to find out, you know, what's going on. I mean, can they volunteer to be an extra or whatever? So, yeah, fill us in on that one.
Absolutely. Well, the biggest thing people could do is help is by trying to figure out ways to help fund us. I'm having to do this all out of pocket. Now, we're not allowed to technically raise money for this thing because it is Disney property, and they frown on you making a profit. But we're not making a profit. We're trying to raise small amounts of money to build sets and costumes and things that will be used for this film and this film only. We're not buying cameras. We're not buying studio equipment. You know, if we buy cloth, it's for a Jedi robe for this costume, or we have to build a spaceship cockpit. So we're doing the fundraiser, and that's on our Facebook page. And then, we're always the extras. If we know, you know, any cosplayers that know how to dress up, that have the costumes, that would be great because, again, we're doing this with relatively no budget. I'm having to do it almost all out of pocket. I am hemorrhaging money on this thing, let me tell you. But it's worth it. It's worth it.
Cool, man. Outstanding.
So,
Star Wars is such an expansive, you can go anywhere with Star Wars. The shame of it is, though, you said that, you know, Disney won't let you do but so much, but because of them, Mara Jade is no longer considered canon. Am I not correct?
It never was. No, it was always an extended universe, and now what they call Legends. We actually thought now when the whole, I don't know how closely you follow Star Wars, but when The Force Awakens came out, everybody swore up and down that Rey was a Skywalker. She was Luke's daughter. You know, it had to be Luke. Luke had to be the father, and that was his kid. And we all believed that. That was the fan theory that was going around. We believed, because she was Mara Jade Skywalker in the novels, we were hoping and praying that Luke wasn't alone on that island, that when he turned around and looked at Rey, the very next scene, he would look over and see Mara coming out of one of the caves or whatever, and it would, that would have been a oh-my-gosh moment. I mean, people would have lost their minds. They would have lost their minds if Mara had stepped out of the cave and said, hey, I'm Mara. Yeah. Whoa. But it didn't happen, so
right.
We moved forward.
I know you mentioned about the struggle, you know, with the difficulty with Disney. You know, I know the Star Wars Theory guy, I'm sure you've heard that made the Darth Vader fan-made tribute film, had his difficulties with Disney. And Lucasfilm had to stick up for him, evidently, eventually.
But that's the thing that was very interesting and really freed us, because we were really nervous. I mean, there are rules that you're not allowed to use canon characters in your film. I've heard that rumor. I've heard people tell me that you can have a droid and a Jedi and all of these things, but you can't have someone play, you know, Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker or any of the canon characters in your film, because they are heavily trademarked. When Star Wars Theory released Vader and had not only Vader, but the Emperor, Padme, young Anakin, I mean, and the list goes on and on. And rumor has it that the second film he's coming out with is going to be Mace Windu. So,
yeah, that'd be interesting.
You know, they're going really, really far with this whole using real canon characters. So it freed us in that we're going to have Obi-Wan. I found an actor who looks like him. I found a voice actor that can do the voice. And we're going to be talking to him by hologram at one point in the film. We've got Yoda. We've got the Emperor. We've got Vader. So, you know, we're doing it. They did a 12-minute film, and it was amazing. I'm not taking anything away from it. Star Wars Theory is crushing it. Like, amazing work. That is so beautiful. But we're doing a two-hour film. It's a lot harder.
It sounds like more of an original story, too.
It's a completely original story, and it's very small. You know, we don't have space battles and all that. We don't need them. It's not germane to the story we're trying to tell. This is a story, basically, without spoiling it, two Jedi end up getting married, and I do give that away and spoil it in the trailer. We do have a trailer. And in the trailer, it does give away the fact that two Jedi Knights are getting married. Obviously, his name's Othar Jade. Her name is Petra Jade. It's the parents of Mara. That's not really a spoiler. You can figure that out. It just goes from there, and it builds. And we can do anything we want, because, like I said, the only reference to Mara's upbringing was that she was taken from her family by the Emperor. And taken is a relative term. You know, we're using a lot of creative license in this, and we don't expect anybody to look at it and go, oh, so that's what happened. And I would love it if they did. I mean, if people started discussing our film and saying, so that's where Mara came from, and that my character from Black Clay Ozark actually becomes an EU character one day, I mean, or a legend, that would be awesome, but I'm not holding my breath. You know, and that's pretty much up to the fans, because Disney doesn't acknowledge EU or Legends. So that's all fan based.
Yeah, it gets filling a lot of plots that were left pretty much open. So that's really cool.
Exactly. So
yeah,
and it's a lot of fun. But it's a very long process. We're deep into filming. We're doing another scene in September. On September 8th, we'll be shooting in Raleigh. We will need extras for that, a few. It's a bar scene. So if you can imagine, we do need aliens, humans, people in the bar. So it's going to be a really fun scene to do.
So now where are you going to be, Rob? What part of town?
I don't know exactly. Our location agent has secured us a bar. I don't want to give away too much, because for security reasons, we do have to keep our people safe. So I'd rather not divulge where we're going to be shooting exactly.
Steven, that's cool. So you'll be at a bar. Yeah, no, that's good enough. You know, just kind of let us know. You know, that's cool.
Yep.
Dr. John likes the bar. But anyway, so that's great. It'll be September 8th.
that's when we're doing our next scene, and then we've got a major lightsaber battle coming up that we have to choreograph and practice for. So we're expecting to be able to release this film about this time next year. About summer of next year, we'll be ready. And we'll work on the second film. Third. Keep going.
And keep on going.
I hope people will like the story. I put a lot into it. It's taken 3 years to polish it. I think it's really tight. It's got some moments that are very funny. It's got its funny moments, just like Star Wars. It's got its, you know, there's a little bit of a romantic aspect. This is a love story. The first film, of course, is about their parents getting married. So it is a Star Wars love story, which really hasn't been done effectively. I mean, the way Lucasfilm did it with Anakin and Padme was great, but it was kind of cheesy. A lot of people feel that it was a little bit on the cheeseball side. We're taking it a little more seriously, making it a little more realistic. They're not just two people that are spouting poetry to each other and sonnets and love and all of that. They get in arguments and they fight and they disagree. And, you know, they have lightsabers, so the fights get interesting. You know, they're a typical married couple. hopefully people will find that entertaining.
Absolutely. Well, I want to say congratulations for all the work that you're doing. And how long ago, and I don't know if you actually said this or not, how long ago did you actually start this project? Because Papa Stroh has spent a lot of movies, and we both know that it takes a long time to get to the end of the project, to get to fruition, distribution, and everything. How long ago really start the project, get in terms of concept, and then in terms of actual, you know, how long ago did you think about it, then how long ago did you start producing?
I started writing it in 2015. That's when I started writing it. And again, like I said, it started off as a 10-minute short film. I'd written like 8 or 10 pages. And when you're doing a script in filmmaking, the typical rule of thumb, now there are exceptions, of course, but the typical rule of thumb is a minute per page of screen time. So we had about 8 to 10 pages, so we were figuring about an 8 to 10-minute film. Well, like I said, Vicky kept adding characters and adding, you know, actors. We brought in LaRon Rose, he's an amazing gentleman, brought him in, and I talked to him, and I was like, oh, I've got to write a part for him. So I ended up writing a part for him, Master Zoxane Horan, and then it just, like I said, it just snowballed from there. So my writing process took a lot longer than it normally would. Normally, I could sit down, like I have another film that I'm working on too. Right after Star Wars, we're going to do a feature film, romantic comedy called The Nice Guy Syndrome. Anybody who's been dated can still understand what I mean by The Nice Guy Syndrome. and it's a romantic comedy. And that I banged out that script in like, I don't know, a little less than a week and a half. I mean, I worked on it every day and got at least a rough draft in about a week. And then it took me about another month to polish it and get it right. This Star Wars script's taken me 3 years. I just finished the last version of it in July. I had to make some major changes in July because we had some cast changes. So I had to do a partial rewrite. And, you know, so it's been an evolution ever since. I look back at some of the manuscripts that I have on my computer just for fun and see how this thing has evolved and changed over the last 3 years. It's incredible. It's not even the same story as I started out with. Completely changed, but it's gotten a lot more interesting because with having more actors and more people involved, I can do so much more than I originally planned. You know, so it's going to be very, very interesting.
You know, you said something quite comical that I want to comment. You said the word complete rewrite. Unless you've worked on a project, people don't understand that complete rewrite do happen, don't they, Dave?
Oh, yeah.
Don't they, Astro? Don't they, Steven? Completely
they did
right
it with Solo. Well, they did it with Solo. Lord and Miller were the original directors of Solo, and Lucasfilm did not like the powers that be, mainly Bob Iger and Kathleen Kennedy. They didn't like what Lord and Miller were doing. They thought it was too cheesy, too comical. They were trying to be too funny, and they pulled the plug on that and brought in Ron Howard, and they did a complete rewrite. I think they only kept out of, I think they were saying out of like 140, 150 pages, I think they only kept like 18 of the original script. You know, so they did a complete rewrite, and that was Lucasfilm. You know, I mean, so me doing it, that's not anything to hang my head low about. I'm not upset about that at all. I'm like, yeah, it happens. You gotta do what you gotta do. But I know where the second film and third film are going now, so those stories are locked in, because once we make the first film, we're committed. So we're going to continue forward as written at this point. So no more real changes. You know, and I tweak on set. Like I said, we have an amazing director, Lauren Boulding, but, you know, at the end of the day, this is my story because I came up with it, so I know the characters intimately. And I may be on set, and an actor will deliver a line, and I'll look at them and go, okay, that was good. You did it exactly as I wrote it, but do something different. Give me something, feel it from you. I want it in your words. I want to know how you would say that. Say that same line, kind of get the concept in your head, and then you say it. And a lot of times I get some really good lines from people that were never in my original script, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to run with that. I'm going to use that cut, you know, that take. So it works. There's actually one in the trailer. If you watch the trailer, there's a character named Callum Hentar, and she says, from what I just saw, I believe it. That's what she said. But the original line was, from what I just witnessed, I believe you. And it's a, you know, it sounds like it's not that big of a difference, but in the delivery, it flowed so much better the way she did it. We ended up using what she did, so it worked. They do that in films all the time.
Yeah, it's called owning your character.
Yes.
Pretty much.
It's fun. When we did our first table read about 2 years ago, I had all the actors that were involved at the time, I had them sit around a big table at a coffee shop, and I said, okay, so who here wants to act in this film? And everybody's hand shot up. And I said, you're all fired. And they were like, what? you're all fired. And they're like, why? And I said, because I asked you a question. The question I asked you is, how many plan to act in this film? I don't want you to act in this film. I want you to be in this film. I want you to be in the moment. Don't lie, you know, deliver lies to me. Okay? Mm-hmm. I want you to feel it. I want you to become your character and own that character. You need, and I tell my cast and crew, call me anytime, and I'll give you backstory. I've actually developed backstory with my actors. We'll sit there on the phone for hours and talk about their character, and they'll be like, ooh, but what if she was born here and she did this? And I'll be like, you know, I like that. Run with it. Yeah, that makes it yours. Absolutely. You know, what if she was an orphan? Okay, great. She's an orphan. Let's run with that. She was an orphan. You know, and it gives it more life if they know what their childhood was like. And, you know, it may not sound like that's important to the film, and you would never see it on the film, but the fact that the actor knows it when she interacts with another character that she knew as a child, that's a totally different frame of mind. You know, it's a different way of dealing with it.
Right.
So it's actually worked very well giving them this backstory. I mean, there are pages of backstory. I could write a novel that's, you know, 1,000 pages long about this.
Awesome.
But and one day I may put out a book. I may decide to put out a book called, you know, The Making of a Fan Film, and kind of spell out exactly how I did it, what we did. Like I said, we're trying to raise a little bit of money right now because we've got a major scene coming up with a spaceship cockpit. That cockpit's going to cost $5,000 to build.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm sweating bullets because, man, if I have to come up with that money out of pocket, I'm gonna lose it. I mean, that's going to be hard. And I only use it for 3 minutes in the film. $5,000 for a 3-minute shot. That's it. That's hard to digest, man. That's really hard to digest.
Yes.
3 minutes. There's literally three pages of dialogue, and it's when my character sits there. They go into hyperspace. I'm not spoiling it. They go into hyperspace, and they're headed to a planet. I won't say where, but they're headed to a planet. And then he turns to his Kate and he says, "So what was that all about?" And she goes into this thing about her past and where she's coming from. All this stuff. So it's a really interesting story, and it actually touches on the Old Republic, which people are going to go nuts when they see that.
Nice.
But, gosh, this thing has Easter eggs all over the place. There's so many Easter eggs, the bunnies just hop. There are Easter eggs everywhere in this thing. And that's when one of the major Easter eggs hits, and people are going to lose it. But so the conversation is important, but it's only a 3 minute shot, and I'm going to spend $5,000 on that 3 minute shot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Such is the film business, right?
It makes me feel so much for the animation people that do hours of animation just for like a couple minute spot. And just it's crazy.
Well, our lightsabers have to be what's called rotoscoped. It's where for those for people that don't know what that is, you have to literally go frame by frame, and you draw that glow onto the lightsaber that we're using, and you make it glow. So there are 30 frames per second. Okay. Most cameras shoot it between 24. We're actually shooting at 24. So we're shooting at what's called 24P, which is 24 frames per second. In a 3 minute fight, you multiply 24. What's 24 times 60? Somebody has a calculator. I don't know. I've never done the math. But 24 times 60, and then that number times 3. So in a 3 minute lightsaber battle, you're dealing with 10, 20, 30,000 frames that you've got to animate one at a time. That's why for these films take years. Now, Lucasfilm has 20 animators doing it. So if they split it up and somebody will edit, the first 20 frames and another person will edit the next 20 frames and the next 20 frames, we've got two guys. So, they're pretty much working around the clock to get it done. On my page, you'll see a little 15-second lightsaber little clip that we did. It's just for fun. I released it, put it out there as a little teaser. It took our editor 3 days to do that. It's only 15 seconds long. So these guys are putting in some extraordinary work. Our costume designer, Beverly Horvath, if you're ever making a film and you need a costume designer, she's the one to go to because she is handcrafting all of our costumes. I've had so many compliments already about our costuming. They're like, "Where did you get these costumes? These are not store-bought." I mean, she's going to thrift stores and getting everything just like Lucas did, just like George did. She's going to thrift stores to find pieces of the costumes to put together, and they already look worn because they're coming from Goodwill and from thrift stores and Salvation Army and stuff. So they already look well-worn. They're not shiny and brand new and fit weird. I mean, everything fits perfectly. Every costume we have is custom-tailored. So it's like our costuming department's incredible. So, like I said, this thing's taken on a whole new life. And when I released my trailer, which, like I said, if you go to our page, look for facebook.com/JadeTheSeries, all one word.
Jade.
Jade the Series. JadeTheSeries. Jade the Series. All in caps. Facebook.com/JadeTheSeries. So if you go there, you'll find what I'm talking about. And if you look at the actual trailer, there's a scene where we're running through the woods and we're shooting our blasters. I've had people tell me, "My God, that looks like something out of, Return of the Jedi." And I was like, "Oh, wow." So we got that. I mean, I was hoping to get maybe the quality of episode 1, I never expected to have a compliment like that. Somebody said, "Yeah, that looks like a shot out of Return of the Jedi." I was like, "Are you kidding me? Okay, good."
Nice.
Well, I kind of played it off like, "Yeah, that's what I was going for."
That's awesome.
No, that's what I had the whole time. I planned to do that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything to connect with the original three, you're in business.
Oh, yeah. And it's because we're doing it so old school. You know, we have to do a lot of practical effects. We have to do, you know, our digital special effects have to be minimal because, you know, we don't have the budget to do it. We don't have the time to do it. Everything, you know, in, like I said, in Eastern North Carolina is all red brick. And red brick doesn't work in Star Wars. So finding, I mean, I've got to shoot an alleyway fight with the lightsabers. They have a fight in the alleyway. Because, you know, I told you there's a bar scene coming up. Well, the bar scene, right after that, there's a fight in the alleyway outside the bar. I can't find an alleyway anywhere that doesn't look like Earth. You know, I can't have street lights and pavements with lines and arrows. And, you know, I mean, I can't have air conditioners hanging out of the window. I mean, these are all things that just absolutely will not work for the shot. And I don't have the budget to green screen it all, you know. So,
maybe just
it's
come
a
out to Jacksonville, North Carolina, because nothing out here is of this earth.
Yeah, that's what I need to do. You know, if I had a few million-dollar budget, I'd be shooting it in Italy, you know, or you know, London, or even New York. But
home of the spaghetti western.
You'd be shooting in Canada.
Yeah. That would be great, but I can't do that. I've got to shoot it here, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we only shoot on Sundays because that's the only time people can get off work.
But there's such a wealth of characters and at depth with it, and that was one of my gripes with, you know, Lucas and even Disney to a certain extent, is that you've created this mass universe of characters. And, you know, I talk about the bad guys all the time because I'm the guy who cheers for the bad guys in the movie. But, you know, you look at Jabba, you look at Boba Fett, you look at Vader, any of the bounty hunters, for crying out loud, there is so much love play with them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can go for miles with those characters. And that's why, you know, Disney kind of having things. When I heard that Disney was buying out Lucasfilm, I was like, okay, well, the good news is they got the cabbage to carry it on. The bad news is they don't have the politics to carry it on. You know what I mean? Everything's. But I.
Well, if I could nerd out on you guys for a second, one of my favorite characters is Vader. Because of the depth of that character, because George created a character that is so integral and so, like, there's so many layers to this character. It's not just a typical bad guy and you got your bad guy and he delivers his bad guy lines and does his bad guy thing. This guy is really, like, deep. If you look at who Vader really is, a lot of people really jumped on Hayden Christensen of how he played Anakin. People didn't like it. People were like, he played it too whiny. He was so whiny. And I don't know if you've seen episode two. Have you seen episode two?
I'm one of those guys.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you've seen episode two, do you remember after his mother got killed by the sand people, you know, he was in his workshop with Padme, and he was like, it's not fair. He's holding me back. You know, and he was being really bratty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, everybody really got on Hayden about that. They were like, oh, Hayden's a horrible actor. He did that so whiny. George told him to do that, and I know he did because as a director, as an actor, you know, doing a film, you've got to look beyond what's on the page. And if you think about it, Luke, his son Luke, years later, was like, I want to go to Tashi Station and pick up the power converters. He was whiny.
Yeah.
So his father was whiny.
Right.
That's why his father was like that, because of Luke. When I tell people that, they're like, wow, I never looked at that. The other really cool thing is he was the chosen one. I mean, there was prophecy that he was the chosen one that was going to bring balance to the Force. A lot of people were like, well, he wasn't the chosen one. Yes, he was. He fulfilled his destiny, because when he killed the Emperor, he brought balance to the Force. He fulfilled that.
Mm-hmm.
But moreover, the deeper layer to all of that is that if you think about it, Vader, that is hailed as an evil character, as the Dark Lord of the Sith, what did he ever do that was evil?
Mm-hmm.
He never did anything that could be considered inherently evil. He couldn't kill his son. He couldn't bring himself to do it. I mean, they'll say, yeah, well, he killed younglings in the temple. They were at war. These were enemy combatants. And anybody mm-hmm. who's been in the military will tell you, an enemy combatant is your enemy. And if you really even go farther than that, look at what he said to Obi-Wan during the final lightsaber battle. He said, you know, the Jedi, he said, the Sith are evil. Obi-Wan said the Sith are evil. And what did Anakin say? He said, from my point of view, the Jedi are evil.
Mm-hmm.
He believed that he was the good guy, that he was doing the right thing, you know, and that the Jedi were wrong. He saw Mace Windu try to assassinate the Chancellor without a trial. You know, he wasn't having that. You know, he said he's got to stand trial. And he's like, no, he's too dangerous to be kept alive. You know,
mm-hmm.
I can't think of anything, and I challenge anyone to tell me anything other than the novels and the books. I'm talking about strictly from the films. What Vader ever did that was evil? He choked more of his own people than he did any enemies.
he sure did.
Captains, you know, like, you know. I jumped out of space too soon. Jumped out of hyperspace too soon. You know.
Right. You know, Todd and I, a couple shows ago, went on a big rant about the whole Vader trailer, or the Vader legacy thing. And I had mentioned that in 1977, and all of us are long enough in the tooth to be able to understand this. In 1977, when Star Wars came out, all right, you know, when Vader came through the smoke and choked out Captain Antilles, all right, and mm-hmm. Peter dangling there, you know, and next thing you know, and the, like you were saying, Stephen, you're going through and he's choking everybody, blah, blah, blah. In 1977, there were really no bad guys that were, you know, you had Dr. No, and then you had the Clint Eastwood bad guys, you know, and it went on into a stink, you know. But Vader was just the evil, because at the time there were no Hannibal Lecter or Freddy or, you know, Jason Voorhees to compare this guy to. Vader was bad news. So when you know, you go through, and I'll be honest with you, I thought Empire Strikes Back, you know, he's out there. He's selling his piece to Luke. Luke jumps off the thing, and Vader's kind of like, well, all right, well, I gave it a shot. You know, you know, and
yeah,
he was just bad news. So when the prequels came out, and suddenly Vader turned into this, and you make a good point about the whole Luke thing, but it was such a shame for the general audience watching this guy who was just flat out bad news evil. And now he's falling in love, and he's, you know, oh, well, they killed my mom, now I'm mad, and blah, blah, blah. So when Rogue One came out, and we saw Vader put the choke on old, what's his name, Keurig, or whatever his name is, the bad guy.
And then the greatest scene when he was wrecking shop on Tantive 4.
Freaking great.
And I was 48 years old watching that movie, and the hair standing up on my forearms, and I looked at my son, and I says, I haven't felt like this since I was 7 years old. And it was
But again, these were enemy combatants, okay? If that had been a good guy going through a bunch of bad guys in a corridor, packing them up, we'd all been cheering on him, going, yeah, kill them all, you know? And it's all a matter of point of view. And I'm about to blow your mind, but if you go to Return of the Jedi, okay, if you look at Return of the Jedi, remember, Vader was created by the midichlorians, by the Emperor. The Emperor actually tells the story. When he tells the story of Darth Plagueis the Wise, he tells him flat out he used the midichlorians to create life, which means that Darth Plagueis created Anakin, okay, to fulfill the prophecy. Not only that, he, you know, the Emperor told Anakin that he could use the midichlorians to cheat death, you know, to keep the people that he cared about from dying. He was so powerful, he could keep those that he cared about from dying. Well, if you look at what Vader says when he's outside of the AT-AT on Endor and he's talking to his son, he says, "I feel the good in you, Father. Let go of your hate." And he says, "It's too late for me, son." You know, he says, "You don't know the power of the dark side. I must obey my master." When he says the word must, listen to how he says it. "I must obey my master," which basically means that the Emperor, not the technology that's in his suit, is what's keeping him alive. He had no choice but to do everything his master bid him to do, or he was dead. And that's proven by the fact they say, well, the lightning had a lot to do with it. I don't think it did. When he threw the Emperor overboard and the Emperor was killed, he was no longer being sustained, and Vader didn't live long after that.
That cut off his power source.
Yeah, that's a good point. That his energy was the one that was keeping Vader alive.
Yeah. He was using the Force just like he predicted he could.
Yeah. I thought Hayden, from the that we were mentioning earlier about his whiny persona in like the second movie, the prequels, right? I thought the transition he did from there to Revenge of the Sith was just amazing. I know some people, he wasn't some people's cup of tea, but I thought his range. We were talking about from going from one extreme to the next was just, as Anakin, was just amazing.
Yeah, the Emperor used Anakin's passion against him. He loved his wife. I mean, people say, like, again, Darth Vader is evil. Well, look at his creation. I mean, he didn't fall to the dark side because he hated anyone. He fell to the dark side because he loved his wife and wanted to save her from death. You know, he did not want to lose her. Or the children, and that broke him. I mean, if you could imagine, you know, I'm a big fan of Vader because that man's been through some stuff. I mean, you know, he lost his wife, he lost his kid, or he didn't know he had twins. He knew he had a kid.
Lost his kid.
You know, she was buried pregnant. You know, he was there. He had to have known what was going on when she had her funeral, even though they didn't show him. I'm sure he was somewhere. You know, and or at least had somebody, you know, videotaping it for him, you know, something.
Monster had quit playing the victim card and actually been the evil bad guy that he actually is and quit being such a bitch. There, I finally got off my chest. That was my thing, and Hayden Christensen, I'm sorry, he's blacklisted on my thing because everything he's done outside of Star Wars is sunk too. And to me, it just it just so victimized Vader. And I'm like, no, Vader is not a victim. Vader is a bad man. And that's what makes him cool. That's what made Jabba cool, because he didn't take nothing off of nobody. And, you know, we talk about wasted characters. We look at Darth Maul. Darth Maul was an absolute machine. I mean, this guy knew nothing but just fight. He had no emotion. He had no lines. I always liked the Phantom Menace marketing campaign. Everything had Darth Maul. Everything. They came out with Darth Maul. And in 1999, the starving Star Wars fans were going, hell yeah, look at this, man. This is going to be the bomb. You know?
I've always thought they could have done so much more with Darth Maul. They could have done so much more with Darth Maul.
And he had a collective 4 minutes in the movie. And don't get me wrong, there's some of the most parts. I mean, I still think that saber battle at the end was one of them, if not the most epic saber battle in the world. It was right up to the top.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
And we're working very hard to emulate that, because one of our characters has a double bladed saber. And it is a lot harder to work with than you think it is. It is really, really hard. I mean, Ray Park is amazing at spinning that thing just the right way. Our actress, we actually tell this story on our video podcast, Carpe Nerdium. Me and Jessica, we do that show together. And she plays Callan Hentar in the film. And I actually tell the story about how one day we were shooting in the woods, and she was practicing with her double-bladed lightsaber, and all of a sudden we heard this loud crack that echoed through the woods. And I looked over at Jessica, and she kind of wobbled forward. She had smacked herself right in the head with the lightsaber because she was twirling it.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, she's all right. I mean, you know, we've all hit ourselves. It's a plastic stick. It's not going to do a lot of damage. It's going to sting for a minute, but she'll be all right. She picks her head up, and she's got blood running down her face. It had hit the corner of her eyebrow just right to where it hit that bone above the eye. And that's a bleeder. And it just bled. I mean, she was just covered. Her face was covered in blood. And we had an EMT on set. So the EMT grabbed her, and he's looking her over, making sure she doesn't need to go to the ER or get stitches. I go instantly into director mode at this point. I mean, I'm worried about her, but I'm also like, okay, guys, we're going to wrap. We're pretty much done for today. That's it. We're not going to get this shot. We'll reschedule it. We'll do it another time. Let's give her time to heal. This is bad. And she apparently heard me start to say that, and she walked over to me, and I love Jessica. She said, no, we're doing this. You know, she said, F it. Nice. She was like, F you, we're doing it. And she goes, everybody get in place. She started barking orders to our crew and cast, like, everybody get in your place. Everybody, we're doing this right now. I mean, the blood in that scene is real blood, because she wasn't makeup. She was bleeding. And the pain, but the thing about it is it brought, she knew as an actress that this was going to help her character, because it brought such pain in her voice and her delivery, because she was in pain. And she used that pain for her delivery. And that is the best scene in the film. And I can't wait for everybody to see that. It's absolutely an incredible shot. And she is just so badass, because she can't, she's hurt. She's physically hurt. And then afterwards he butterfly stitched it and she was fine. But, you know, we had another actor that was laying. Jessica not only was bleeding on set, but she went and looked out for everybody else that was there. She was more worried about everybody else, because we had a bunch of slain pirates in the battle, and they were laying on the ground. And this one guy, Lewis, one of our actors, had like five or six Black Widows on him. And they were crawling all over him, all these Black Widows. And she's, you know, knocking these things off of him like a true Jedi, you know. It was like he didn't move. Like, he had all these spiders, but he did not move. He was not going to ruin the shot. He gutted right through it. I was like, oh, my God. I've got the most incredible cast and crew ever.
That's awesome.
I can't wait for you guys to see this. These are some dedicated people.
I'm excited.
I mean,
once I get out.
And the thing about Ray Park, too, if you ever watch any of his demonstrations with his martial arts and everything, what you tend to forget is that Ray Park ain't but like 5'6", 5'7". This guy isn't a
little guy.
And for him to be able to get around the way he does, I mean, the guy, he's just an incredible watch. When you're watching his demonstrations and everything, but again, another wasted bad guy. And what evidence, Exhibit A, that I present to the court that was a wasted bad guy? In every other Star Wars thing, what they've been doing, bringing Maul back, because they knew damn well that he was a wasted character And
I love what they did in Clone Wars. I mean, I'm a big Clone Wars fan of the cartoon, and they did Filoni did an amazing job with that, bringing him back and the evolution of his character. And then on to Rebels. I mean, they did a great job in Rebels with him too. So
I loved Rebels. I tell you what, I didn't think I was gonna like it. I started watching it. I thought Rebels was great.
Oh well, then you're gonna love The Calling, our second film, because the second film, and I'm not gonna spoil it, but I'm gonna let everybody know, and you guys are the first ones to hear about this, other than the cast and crew. We are actively searching for actors who look and sound the part for Kanan and Ezra, and we are gonna have the ghost, and you are gonna actually encounter in a very short scene Kanan and Ezra. And
nice.
So we're actually going, because our film takes place right at that time, so we're gonna have the ghost land, and Kanan and Ezra are gonna get off the ship. They're gonna walk down the gangplank, and or in the gangway, and then they're gonna interact with me and another character, and I won't tell you what they're doing, but it's gonna be a very interesting scene, and yeah, you'll get to see actual Kanan and Ezra in real life rather than a cartoon. So it's gonna be the first depiction of these two characters on film, and we're really excited about that. But we're trying to find a young boy of about 14 that can play Ezra. You know, so we're going to try to get close. Huh?
That's another one of those storylines, though, when they cut it off. When I watched season 4 at the end of it, I'm kind of going like, gosh, guys, you know, we probably could have done a little more with this. You know how sometimes shows outrun. As a matter of fact, I think The Walking Dead's kind of running into it right now, where they're kind of going a little too far out to where maybe they should have just pulled it up. As much as I don't want to see The Walking Dead go away, they've gotten so far away from what made the show good. The same thing happened to MASH and a bunch of other shows that we could, you know, name off over the years. But,
well, speaking of Walking Dead, we've got, in our first film, we've got playing a character named Sten. She's in the first and second film. Actually, she's in the third film as well. None other than Amber Dawn Fox, who played Officer Bello in The Walking Dead.
Get out of here.
Nice.
You ain't got Amber. Oh, for crying out loud.
Amber is playing, she's playing Sten in our film. Actually, she's going to be in the scene we're shooting on September 8th. And it's a major scene, and she's going to be playing I'll tell you, I know it's not really a spoiler, but she's playing a Twi'lek.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so she's going to have the head tails, and she's playing a Twi'lek named Sten. And so, that's going to be Amber. And, we're very excited to have her, and you know, like I said, she played Officer Bello in season 5. So, we've got some people in this thing.
He's another one that's actually crying. You know what I mean? Not one of these ones that feels like they're above it. He actually has a good heart and is giving his best. And her recent success shows it. You know what I mean? It's she's another good good folks in the old Comic-Con gang.
I'm excited about her playing Sten, and she's going to bring some amazing life to that character. And I'm really excited to see her as a Twi'lek. She's going to be sitting in the makeup chair for at least 3 or 4 hours. Her entire body has to be painted blue.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're airbrushing her. We're airbrushing her, and she's going to be sitting in that thing for a long time.
Actually, we know somebody that could help you out with that stuff if you need it, with that airbrushing stuff and all that.
Desperately. We desperately need it. We desperately need it.
Definitely would knock it out.
Yeah, we still need a really good lighting guy. That's the other thing we're looking for, is a really good lighting person who can gel lights and make them look really cool and funky and Star Warsy, and you know, because we're having a hard time with lighting, and it takes a real talent for. I mean, that's an art form in and of itself, is lighting a film a certain way to give it a certain look, and especially a Star Wars film that has to be lit a certain way, or it's just going to look wrong. So finding a good lighting guy has really been problematic for us. But we're getting there. But yeah, if you go to our, like I said, if you go to our Facebook page. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to ask you with the and please go ahead and give the Facebook page information and answer this. But with the third of the new trilogy coming up, which I'm on the fence about this new trilogy, I enjoy it, but I feel like it could probably use a little less happiness. There are certain characters in there that just they seem to have alter egos. Poe, who is a very endearing character in the first one, is now a character like Davey just developed in the second character, or the second film. You got Finn, and he was an absolutely useless character all the way around. That whole casino planet, they could have trimmed that movie up by a half hour just by cutting all that out. But, and then, of course, you got Mark Hamill that to give Star Billings. The guy dropped 60 pounds to be in the first movie, and all he does is turns around and pulls his hood down. There was so much about it that has me kind of stuck in my head. What are your expectations and hopes for the third film? Are you hoping that it's going to come around, or are you expecting the worst? What do you got in mind?
Absolutely. We're very excited about what we're doing and why we're doing it, and we're going to start doing the Comic-Con circuit hopefully next year when we get this thing released, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I think you guys are going to be very impressed. If they go to our Facebook page, they can see a trailer already, and we also have a perk on our fundraiser. If anybody that donates over $10 will get access to a very exclusive private VIP group on Facebook, and they get all the behind-the-scenes stuff. Like, they'll get behind-the-scenes videos and making of and blooper reels and everything before anybody else. Like, that's where we dump a lot of stuff, like behind-the-scenes pictures, and they can interact with the cast and talk to them. And I'll get you guys access to it. You have to hit me up on Facebook. Yeah. I'll get you guys back.
This is Dr. John. I love behind the scenes. That sounds awesome.
Dude, you're breaking up hard.
Yeah, real bad. I couldn't hear you at all.
Yeah, sorry. I'm up here in Lakemont, Georgia. It's kind of crazy up here. Just waiting on the Bigfoot. But anyway, tell you what, it's been great getting to talk with you and find out all about your films and everything. And I tell you what, since I'm breaking up, I'm going to turn everything over to Papa Stro, Dave, and Todd because, the signal is getting kind of low. So I'm going to sign off. Great to be here with everybody. I'll be back next week. We've got things coming up with the Cherokee Comic-Con, and since I'm having that, I'll say goodbye to everybody, and you guys keep on going, okay?
All right.
Sounds like a plan.
Have a good night,
right,
Dr. John.
Dr. John will be back.
All right.
Very cool.
So that being said, we've got loosely 22 minutes left. And, of course, we'd like to do our plugs right there at the very end. We'll give ourselves, since we've got a full staff tonight, we'll give ourselves about 10 minutes for that. Because, of course, Stephen's going to need a lot of room to give some plugs because we want to get all your information in before you sign off this evening. But, yeah, I mean, if you don't mind me asking, and being a fellow writer, I understand you can't show your cards because then everybody gets in on it. But if you had a couple characters in the Star Wars universe that really intrigued you and really said, hey, I really want to write about this guy, what are a couple of those that you have?
If I could understand you, I was barely able to understand you. What characters would I like to write about?
Absolutely. Am I sounding better now?
Yes, much better. So repeat your question real quick.
Yeah, I moved my phone 3 inches. It's amazing what living a mile from an AT&T tower will do, but nevertheless, coming up here, of course, being a
well, your owner has to be used to that 3-inch move, isn't she?
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know what it is. Sometimes you can step to the left and it comes in better. You step to the right and it doesn't. It's all about finding that sweet spot.
That's what she said.
That's what we need. We need some Steve Carell in the Star Wars universe. But some Michael Scott, maybe. Maybe he could be one of the Emperor's guys now. But
that would be hysterical.
Oh, God. Let him command like a Star Destroyer. And when, you know, Vader's getting on him about, hey, you know, you lost the Millennium Falcon, he's going, well, I didn't particularly lose them as much as they got away. Now, there's a big difference between that. But, yeah, if you had a couple of different characters that intrigued you enough to write about, which ones would you, which ones would be your jam, so to speak?
I would love, if I was able to do it, I have a feeling that Lucas is actually doing it. Lucasfilm is doing it right now. We're thinking that that's going to be the new trilogy that went out, I think, in 2021 or 2022. It's about the Old Republic. I would love to do Revan and, you know, all those characters from the Old Republic. I would love to do the Old Republic. Like, that would be so intense. I'm actually referencing it in my film just because I have to. I had to get it in there, you know. So I'm actually heavily referencing it. Matter of fact, Daniel Lane, who is well known for Darth Revan, playing Darth Revan, and he's an incredible lightsaber master. He lives out in California, and he's going to be shooting a very pivotal scene out in California for us, so that we could incorporate it into a flashback. And we actually reference Revan, and you get to see him, and yeah, it's going to be really, really intense, and we get to see what he can do with that. I'm really excited to get that footage for him and start editing it, and that's going to be incredible. The other character I would love to do would be Darth Plagueis. I would love to do a story on his backstory, how he became, you know, a Sith Lord. Because he started off as an apprentice at one point. Everybody did. You know, so I would love to see what he was like as an apprentice. Another character I would love to see is, and I couldn't do it. It would take Lucasfilm to do it. I hope they do it one day. Is Yoda's origin story, like going back to when he was a Padawan, you know, and how he was trained and how he became Yoda, you know, the Jedi Master we know today. But when he was very young and agile, I mean, that would be an incredible. What do you think he's good at 900 years old? Imagine how he was at, like, you know, 40.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, my son had mentioned the exact same thing the other night. He had said, man, wouldn't it be nice if we could get a Yoda story? Because, I mean, there's so much you can go with Yoda. He's another wasted character. There's just so much you can do with that guy. It's, you go on and on. And like you said, he's 900 years old when we meet him. That's an awful lot of ground to cover. You know, he can have own line of film. Yeah.
That would actually be an amazing story if it were written properly. And, you know, this Mara Jade thing, like I said, it took off. It started off, like I said, as a 10-minute short film. The original short film was basically, I was her father. I played her father, Hothar Jade. And her mother, Petra Jade, was already dead. And in that original 10-minute script, you know, I was teaching my daughter the ways of the Force. She was about 12. And we had just, I'm teaching her the ways of the Force. Or, I'm sorry, not 12, about 7 or 8. And I'm teaching her. And I come to find out that her mother wasn't killed by the Inquisitors. That Mara herself killed her mother in cold blood. And, of course, that's when I have to stop my daughter from, you know, falling to the dark side. But, of course, I fail because, ultimately, Mara does fall. You know, and like I said, this started off as a real, real short film, and we were just going to shoot it in the woods. That it was, you know, one shot, one take, and it would be done. And that turned into, over the last 3 years, into a trilogy of feature films with an amazing cast and crew of over 100 people. And I'm like, sometimes I shake my head, and I'm like, how did I get here? This is not what I signed up for.
No kid.
Yeah, I expected to spend maybe $100 on the whole film, you know, when I started doing this, and now I'm already, you know, $15,000 in the hole, and getting ready to spend another $5,000. You know, so like, how did I get here?
But still, it's the dedication of the fans that keep it, you know, out there and alive and still topical. Other titles, other things have kind of died off and slowed down, whereas Star Wars continues to keep pumping iron, and then it's got everything to do with guys like you that just keep the tradition alive, so to speak, you know?
Well, I like the idea that it's already a set universe. Now, that's good and bad. The good is that I don't have to think. All I got to do is research. You know, I don't have to come up with anything spectacularly new because everything's pretty much been set forth already. But the bad side of that is that the fans, nobody hates Star Wars more than the Star Wars family. You know, if we make one mistake, if we have one thing that just doesn't look right or doesn't fit the Star Wars universe, you know, people are going to rip us apart. You know, it was so funny because we had that happen. We had a comment. That little, our page, on our you know, Facebook page, there's a little 15-second little lightsaber battle between me and Laron. And we do this little lightsaber sparring battle. It's 15 seconds. Everybody was commenting, wow, it looks great, looks great. And there was this one guy, and he was absolutely right. He said, hey, your tabards are crossed in the back. Like, he noticed that the costume was wrong. Because the tabards were crisscrossed instead of going straight down. And Laron called me and he's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, you have no idea, dude. Like, they're going to be watching for everything. Yes. And that's one thing that we're doing that a lot of fan films don't do. Now, I'm not putting down other fan films, but if you go to Facebook or to YouTube and you look up fan films, a majority of them, number one, are very short. They're 8, 10, 12 minutes long. Most of them are people showing off their lightsaber skills, and it's a bunch of people running around in the woods with lightsabers. Case in point, there was a short film about 18 minutes long that came out called Darth Maul Apprentice.
Yeah, I saw it.
Fantastic film.
Yeah, right.
The Swedish people did amazing job with this thing. It is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it looks incredible, but there's no real dialogue. There's no story, you know, and that inspired me because I was like, now Star Wars Theory did a great job. They have an actual story along with amazing special effects. I wanted to do a film that's a feature film that has amazing special effects and looks very Star Wars and feels very Star Wars, but also has the dialogue, like has the banter. And the fun and the jokes and the, you know, I mean, I say at least twice, I've got a bad feeling about this. You know, we throw that in there just because we can, you know, and it's at the funniest moment. There's a scene after the honeymoon, we climb out of bed together, and after Jedi's get married, of course, what are they going to do in their honeymoon? You know, we reference it, and they're wrapped in a sheet laying in bed together, and he sits up, and she's like, I want to go practice, I want to go spar with, you know, let's have a workout. So they're going to go outside and spar with their lightsabers, and as he goes to get up, he goes, all right, I'll be out there in a moment, I need to drain the Rancor. And she was like, really? And he's like, what, people don't pee in your uniforms? And she's like, yeah, they do, but I don't want to hear about it. I mean, you know. So it's a kind of a little husband and wife moment where he's like, I'm going to drain the Rancor. And I thought, why not? You know, it'll be fun. It'll get a laugh out of people.
And the older you get, it's going to want it.
Because I've noticed about science fiction films. Huh?
We're We're at 19 after, brother.
Yeah, I mean, most the Star Wars, Star Trek, all the science fiction films, you notice nobody ever uses the bathroom. Ever.
Yeah, there's never anywhere to make a deposit.
Just for the record, they did talk about reutilizing those things in the prequel series for Star Trek Enterprise. They did have a whole episode where they talked about reutilizing some of that stuff.
Yeah, they had to, because if you watch the original series, I mean, it's like, I think the Enterprise even had bathrooms.
Everybody just held it.
There was never.
And you know what? In Deep Space Nine, they definitely referenced the waste disposal systems.
Oh, I'm sure. But again, like I said, they had to, because people were making fun of the original series and going, no one ever talked about it. It was never even referenced. You know, I would have loved to see Kirk sitting in the captain's chair talking to a Klingon and you hear a toilet flush in the background.
People forget those Easter eggs in Airplane 2 with William Shatner, just all the Star Trek Easter eggs. with the doors and the periscope and everything. That was great.
Oh, was that was such an amazing moment. See, I'm 49 years old, so I went to a drive-in with my parents in 1977 to see Star Wars on opening day. We went to a drive-in movie, and we're sitting in the family station wagon watching this movie called Star Wars, and I was 7 years old. I didn't know what it was. My father and mother, we watched it all together. But what was really, really funny about that is my father had never seen it. You know, it was a new film. It just come out. And during the compactor scene, when he's like, you know, 3PO, come in, 3PO, 3PO. And he's like, get on top. I can't. My father made me duck down behind the seat because he thought they were going to get squashed. You know, it didn't dawn on my father that all of the cast members in this film were in the same location. They're probably not going to die because it would be the end of the movie. But he didn't think that through. So he's like, Steven, duck down. I don't want you to see this part. It might be really bad. You know, because he didn't know whether they were going to be squashed into a bloody pancake. And so I'm ducked down behind the seat at 7 years old. So what do I hear? Now, I challenge you to do this. Watch episode 4. And turn your back, or, you know, don't look at the screen during that scene when he's like, 3PO, come in, 3PO. And he's like, curse my buddy, I wasn't fast enough. They're dying, R2. And you're like, ha, ha, ha. And they're screaming to a 7-year-old hiding behind the seat. What I was imagining in my mind was 10 times more horrific than anything they could have showed on screen. And to this day, I can't watch that screen without my blood running cold, because it was so, you know, hearing it was so much worse than seeing it, you know. And I thought they were dying, you know, because if you listen to it, it's like, oh my God, the sound is terrifying to a 7-year-old.
My mom let me go see it right to start with, because the commercial that had the Jawas zapping R2 and R2 falling over, my mother thought it was too violent, of course, kindergarten teacher. And dad was overseas at the time. So mom, and it was up until the point where me and my brother were getting slugged at school, because we were the only guys that hadn't seen it, that we had the chance to finally go see it. And it was funny, my brother had a Chewbacca and I had a Darth Vader action figure. And we thought that Chewbacca was the bad guy and Darth Vader was the good guy. So when we watched the movie, we were like, damn, we got this all messed up. But, that's funny. That's, you know, get down behind the seat. You don't want to see these guys twist, you know?
Dave?
Yeah, like I said, if you get a chance.
Whether they're an action figure or not. They're called now.
Yeah, I was saying, if you get a chance, next time you watch that show, that movie, when it gets to that part, when he's calling for 3PO and telling him, shut down all the garbage mashers on the dungeon level, you know, if you turn your back and don't look at the screen, it's really, really horrific. For about a second until you realize that they're okay.
We're at 5 minutes.
All right. Huh? Well, with that being said, we're going to pass it around and do our plugs real quick. Todd, you want to lead it off, buddy?
Hey, I'm going to start with family because I'm going to need forgiveness since in the green room before the show, Dr. John mentioned that the Sheets Watchers are going to be at the Horror Hound Weekend in Indianapolis. So I just bought a weekend pass. So y'all pray for me. I got to go explain to wife why I spent that money. So family,
hey,
just saying.
The animal, spirit animal thing, we had to take one for the team with that. So, yeah, you're up, Todd.
Thanks.
So, with that being said, Bro, would you like to go next, sir?
Yeah, tomorrow night, WCW Retro podcast returns at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on TheUXNation.com. Talking about dream matches, old school matches, and the latest in wrestling news, etc. Be sure to check out the Dust Series Season 3, which is playing right now on their Facebook and YouTube channel, facebook.com/DUSK Series, Dust on YouTube, youtube.com/DUSK Series. And all the latest in TV, wrestling, film, check out, and merchandise, rather, go to my official website, destro.com, and click on the merchandise link, check out all the cool pop-ups from merchandise. Facebook, Strota Maestro, Twitter at Sign of Stro, YouTube at youtube.com/Stro Maestro, and on Instagram at Stro Maestro. Great to be back here with you guys. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no, we appreciate you being back, man. I tell you what, it's good to have you here, and we've missed you. So, yeah, right on. Glad to have you back, dude.
Yeah, most
so, my plug for the week, real quick, will be, of course, the Hunger Series on Amazon. You can pick up Riding Frontier, Revelations, and Ripper any given time you want to. Just check it out on Amazon.com. But moreover, I just want to give a great big finger to the condition called cancer. I still believe that we have a cure for it, but there's more money in the treatment, and that's the reason why we're not doing the right thing, because it's all about the ducats. It's all about the money. So, Dango, love your brother. And you know what?
Yeah.
You won. You won, dude. So save us a seat. Love you much. And, yeah, too soon, man. But, hey, there's we know you went out in style, so keep it up. So, Steven, sir, if you would, we've got a little bit under 3 minutes, man. Give us as much juice as you possibly can. Tell us about you.
Well, I was, I don't know. It's kind of, I could give you my plugs, basically. Threw through me with that one. Tell me about you. Well, you know, I'm just this guy, you know, born. I had a middle-class family with a middle-class dog, you know. My mother never loved me, you know.
Yeah.
My mother never breastfed me as a baby. She said she only liked me as a friend.
Rodney Dangerfield reference. I like it.
You like that? Good. I thought I'd throw that in there. So, yeah, but if you go to facebook.com/JadeTheSeries, you'll be able to find us. You can look me up, Stephen Bastion, and friend me on Facebook, and I can direct you all that. I do a video podcast with my co-star from Will of the Force, from Star Wars, Jessica Lamb. She is absolutely amazing. She is such an uber nerd for a female. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to make that sound sexist. Most girls that are nerds are not, you know, they're not as nerdy as the guys. You know, guys are the cliche nerd. Girls, there's some nerdy girls, but she is like the queen of all nerds, and she loves it. She embraces it, and she's absolutely awesome and hysterical, and we have a lot of fun, and being that it's video, you never know what's going to happen. She rapped, we have a drinking game in the video podcast called rabbit trailing. Whenever she rabbit trails or goes off topic, or I go off topic, we have to take a drink. Yeah, so it gets really interesting real quick.
All right, we're under a minute. Brother, you have been an outstanding guest.
Absolutely.
Really have, Stephen. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. If you ever need me to come back or you want to catch up with me again, you know, just give me a shout. I'll be glad to come back on. I love talking Star Wars.
No, we would love to have you because you've done good. But I appreciate
especially
it. Everybody
when,
have a good
especially
night.
Especially when episode, nine comes out, you know, Rise of Skywalker, we should definitely all talk about that after that film comes out, after we see that. That would be fun.
Oh, without
yes,
a doubt, talk it up.
Yeah, when Rise
of
Skywalker comes out, we need to talk it.
And we'll definitely get you back on. I don't see why not, for crying out loud. But from all of us, your pop culture stars, we got to sign off. Safe travels, and we appreciate everybody listening. You guys have a great night. Thanks again. And thanks again.
You are the absolute best.
Thank you.